From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 640, Speaking the Language of Machine Learning with guest Jen Underwood. Recorded Tuesday, May 14th, 2019. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing a new guest today. This is Jen Underwood, a.k.a., as on Twitter, I Dig Data, which is a good handle. She's a senior director at Data Robot and the founder of Impact Analytics and an avid blogger at jenunderwood.com. She's a unique blend of product management and hands-on experience in data warehousing, reporting, visualization, and advanced analytics. In addition to keeping a constant pulse on industry trends, she enjoys digging into oceans of data to solve complex problems with machine learning. And over the past 20 years, Jen has held worldwide product management roles at Microsoft and served as technical lead in system implementation firms. She has experienced launching new products and turning around failed projects. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And I got to say, this all started with this article in Information Week about stopping talking gobbledygook to business, specifically about machine learning.
Yes, but it doesn't have to be.
No. Well, I mean, I think I've served business as well as an IT person, as a technology person, just translating what technology can do for business into business terms. It only makes sense.
Right. So I started my career, the first 15 years with systems implementation, mm-hmm. and certainly we wouldn't go to the business and say we're going to do some integration services, ETL packages with script tasks, and we just would never say that.
Yeah, and they don't actually care. It's always a value proposition. How is this going to benefit the business?
Right. Bring it into their world where they live in terms they understand. And often from the analytics and data warehousing perspective where I grew up, it was a report or a chart or some metric and you know, the more efficient process of analyzing data or getting information maybe they never had before. But yeah, it certainly wasn't talking about the underlying technologies.
In the old days of data analytics, when we had these folks that emerged as analysts, I found it was almost a 50-50 split of business people that learned data and data people that learned business. But I think the average analyst, anyone preparing a report like that, usually has a pretty good grasp on the metrics that business cares about.
Yes. So it's been very interesting to me. So I started in 1996, and it was IT-led. Mm-hmm. You know, folks would just come to me, and they had a laundry list of, you know, different types of projects or needs for the business. And there was a really large disconnect between IT and the business. Whoever was leading that unit for IT or how you would get to me, that person was the barter or the, you know, the translator per se, and you might engage. And then certainly over time became much more engaged in the business or working with folks that were analyzing the data. Maybe they were doing crazy scripts in VBA and Excel or Microsoft Access and it's not scaling. And then, well, we got to bring IT into the situation. And it would be those folks that, if I think about today in the self-service BI movement and that whole, you know, wave that we had, the evolution to self-service BI, the folks that were doing crazy things with VLOOKUP tables and linked servers and all those kinds of things, they are now in a great place to be able to be, you know, self-service business analysts and, you know, data analysts and crunching data with Power BI and things like that in the market. But there's still a need, and I haven't seen anyone in my network that was what I would say a BI professional doing dimensional modeling, analysis services, cubes, and SQL Server data warehousing. None of them lost their job.
No.
I mean, they're doing that thought that, oh, it's going to replace us.
No. We've never been gotten to the bottom of the list of work that needed to be done, ever.
Mm-mm. They're not replaced. Those people become the heroes and the enablers to make sure things are done responsibly. So if they play their cards right, they can have, you know, much more influence and impact in their organization.
And do you see machine learning as just an extension of their existing jobs, the same way they used to slice and dice cubes? Now they're just using machine learning to do similar things?
No. So it's been really interesting to me. The tools are so much easier, and the impression is that you push the button and it's just simple and the machine will do everything.
That has not been my experience.
That hasn't been mine either, but we're certainly seeing that in the market where, the end of the machine or augmented analytics, and you just push this easy button and here you go. And that's not the case. There's still a large domain knowledge gap. And just as if I would say, if you wanted to build a data warehouse, you can't just send data analysts to start building a data warehouse. No. And they don't know what they're doing. It's the same thing with machine learning, but the learning curve, even in the terminology and the charts and what they're looking at, and it's significant.
Yeah, not a trivial problem. Are we just caught in the typical hype cycle of a new technology where it seriously overpromises and delivers, and then we go down into that sort of, I think it was Gartner's line, right? You go down into the pit of disillusionment, and then you sort of climb back up with some realistic expectations?
I don't. So the folks that are approaching this correctly are getting immense value. The case studies that I'm seeing are incredible. I mean, you're talking, you know, $400 million in savings, $200 million in savings. And you start thinking about how much smarter and faster they're going to business by being more proactive in the ways of thinking to optimize outcomes. And the impacts are significant. And it is why we're seeing, and it was McKinsey that published this report. It's, you know, you keep hearing about the trillions of dollars that competitors are going to steal from you. But now we're starting to see the early results that it is the laggards. And as automation, this gap, you know, I talked to a group, it was in Australia on Sunday night, and it was Monday over in Australia. And they're telling me they're thinking about enabling self-service BI right now. And I thought, my goodness, I had that conversation 10 years ago.
Yeah, no kidding. But there's
10 years ago, literally a decade.
Yeah. And now they're just getting to it. But I love this dichotomy between, we have the new technology and so it's easy, but it provides hundreds of millions of dollars worth of value. So why isn't absolutely everybody doing it? You know, it's anything that provides that kind of value is probably hard.
Well, it's not just that it's hard. I think that a lot of folks, if you think about it, and the conversation I had with that group was, what we're seeing happen is, you know, shorter lifespans of companies, and you know, you're going to get outperformed. You're going to be looking for a job.
Yeah.
You know, you need to get on the bandwagon. So not just rolling out self-service BI now. I told them they need to, in parallel, at the same time, have a team, at least of data scientists, using some of the automation to feed in predictive columns, at least to their self-service BI. You know, so they're not falling any further behind.
Sure.
Because they can't afford to. But
although I'm finding it, most folks are having a terrible time trying to find a data scientist. Like, it seems like it's easier to make them than it is to hire them.
Yes. So what is interesting, Gartner had said there's something like more than 60% of the market of available data scientists have less than 3 years experience.
Right.
And, you know, you have a lot of new folks. So you do need to have mentoring. And, you know, I work in it's kind of like the citizen data science and automated machine learning space. And what we're seeing is, just like we do with self-service BI, you can successfully scale, but you still need to approach it correctly. You still need mentoring from somebody that knows what they're doing. It can be done, but a lot of people don't always approach it the right way, or they try to shortcut, or they just assume it's easy and they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah, Dunning-Kruger is an amazing power, but we battled this all through data analytics as well. Like, this seems like a familiar argument.
It is. The one piece that's significantly different for me is I've usually been able to understand, you know, some of the patterns in data warehouses, or I could communicate to the business the value of a report. Communicating the value of a machine learning algorithm, AI, and even the results and the interpretation that comes out is so different. I tease, and that's why I wrote that article. It's almost, when I look at the different conversations and in the channels that we have for the data scientists, they're speaking a whole nother language. And no one can understand what they're saying.
This, again, sounds incredibly familiar.
yeah, it's on a whole other level. Because I consider myself technical, and sure. I still go, okay, I had 2 years of data science, and okay, wow.
Yeah.
You're all just, yes, it's another language.
And is it mostly a language of maths? Because you see a lot more conversations about things like linear regression and probability models, things that I don't think really entered into the traditional data analytics lingo.
No, it is new lingo altogether. So it's things like partial dependence plots and log loss versus RMSE and just all these different ways of maybe even feeding in data and the different types of holdout patterns or the different algorithm types and why is this behaving versus that behaving differently. And, you know, if I just pull up and look at just all these different interpretability channels talking about bias and just so many different things to be thinking about in here to try to explain and interpret these models, it's just a whole nother level of, it is, it's like learning a new language.
Now, the question I have is, having made a good career out of translating technical concepts into business terms, are we really asking the business folks to come to us here? Or should we be able to translate this into business terms?
So I think there's going to be this whole role in talking to some really successful groups who've gone past a POC per se. You know, you get to a POC, it's usually easy to sell. A lot of the executives, this is top down.
Oh, yeah. And we've got all the hype in the world, right? Like,
They're like, we need to have this. And it's a top down sell. But then you get to the POC and then you get help from the vendor. And then usually folks will stumble, you know, what to do next. They don't even understand how to identify what's a proper type of problem to solve with this technology.
Right.
But what I'm seeing is if someone has a data scientist, again, you know, think about whether it's the BI professional and designing the foundation correctly, scientists being able to apply the right types of, you know, put in input and use the right data to develop the models, et cetera. If you can free them up to some degree to talk to the business and you have that translator from the business that understands what the data means and dreamy situation is you have somebody savvy in the business. It was maybe that person that was slinging some SQL code or trying to do crazy linked queries and all the things they do in VBA. You have that person learn a little bit of data science working with that data scientist. That's the magic AI interpreter. And I think I've seen a few different groups talk about this, whether it's AI translator, AI interpreter. This job really makes it happen.
And I guess they come to the table knowing probably some business values already, and certainly knowing where and how the current data is stored. So, I mean, there's a lot of already stuff known. Now they're just learning into these new tools.
So they're getting to see data a little differently. I had a person track me down at a conference. It was really quite funny. And he says it was this one type of chart that he looked at. And he says, we found over $200 million in money laundering in this. And we had data scientists before. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you need to tell me about this. Mm-hmm. It just so, you know, I'll never look at that chart type the same now. I think immediately about, wow, a person was a data analyst. He wasn't a data scientist. We were at one of the industry conferences for analytics. It wasn't a data science conference and tracked me down. And I wanted feedback on the experience because I was skeptical. I tend to be skeptical of, you know, can data analysts really do this? If I can't even understand what it is. So if you're doing it, I want to talk to you. And that's how he found me. And he explained to me well with the guidance and some of the interpretation from the data science. I mean, we're looking at this together. We just uncovered amazing insights. So seeing from their lens of perspective, of understanding the context of the data that the data scientist didn't understand.
Right.
And now we're breaking down these silos to go, holy cow, well, now what's the next best thing we can do with this? And
isn't that what real discovery always is? It's never eureka. It's, that's weird.
Yeah.
You know, finding something like embezzlement is literally, this data doesn't look anomalous to anybody who doesn't work in this industry. And only when someone with real domain experience looked at the data and said, that's weird. We got to go into that. And wow, to turn up that kind of theft is extraordinary.
Yeah, it's one of the shocking stories that, you know, you think about what is the beauty of citizen data science. I don't even necessarily think it's always the citizen data science scientist doing the work. It's them working together with other folks. And, you know, they can solve some problems on their own, no problem. But it's this amazing synergy that's happening. that they can interpret and understand. And the data scientists will be so deep into other things, they wouldn't necessarily know the context.
Sure.
So if you think about right back into systems implementation, 20 years ago, it's walking through the process, you know, not just being an IT person sitting in IT, you know, soliciting requirements over the phone. You go and you look at what you're building a system to do. And you talk to the people, you look at what's on their desk, or you look at, you know, maybe they're out in the field somewhere and you're like, oh, wow, it's bright light here. You'd never be able to see this app that we're developing.
Right. Yeah. Makes you completely blind to it. And Jen, I'm going to interrupt you for one moment for this very important message. This episode of Run As is brought to you by SQL Intersection. 8 full-day workshops and over 40 technology-focused sessions make SQL Intersection a unique source of the best information around SQL Server from real-world consultants and members of the SQL Server team. You'll learn proven problem-solving techniques and technologies you can implement immediately, as well as learn about the future of SQL Server. Get answers to performance monitoring, troubleshooting, designing for scale and performance, cloud, as well as new features in the latest version of SQL Server 2019. It's time to determine your migration strategy, and SQL Intersection is the place to figure out the best way to do it. Come to SQL Intersection at the Swan Hotel in Orlando, June 10th to 13th. Use code RUNAS to get your discount on your registration at SQLIntersection.com, and we'll see you there. And we're back. It's Richard Campbell on RUNAS Radio. I'm talking to Jen Underwood about the speaking of the data language that I think machine learning is bringing to us one way or the other. And it's easy to sort of hide under the just speak business to me. I think this translator person, and I think you've made a really strong case for, has domain knowledge, has data experience already, just learning this additional pieces of language, this data language of machine learning. Should we go over some terms, what you need to learn or where you go to expand your knowledge set around this?
Sure, we could do that. So one of the things is Gartner has a nice blog on data literacy and the need for organizations to invest in this. And usually you think about all the different resources that might be available out there. There's edX that Microsoft often uses for their teaching on the platform. There's also many other just open source. And even if you look up statistics and machine learning to learn this type of terminology, there's more and more free resources and ebooks and whatnot available for them. I've shared one on my website recently that's a little ebook. You don't even have to sign up to get it. You can just download it, which is quite nice. So you don't get those marketing emails per se. But there's a lot of different resources now to get started. I think to really understand this technology, you probably do want to get a 101 level of how does machine learning actually work, and a 101 level on the terminology.
It makes sense to bring in a consultant for the first project and get yourself started in the right direction? Or is it something you can learn from scratch and grow into?
So I do think that it's a risk to just think that you can go on your own and learn from a book. Mm-hmm. I did that, right? And I didn't even realize what I was doing wrong until I worked with real data scientists. So it's a bit invaluable you'll learn so much from that first project with someone, and it doesn't have to be outsourced. It can be someone internally in your organization to mentor you along the way. And I'd even say keep that mentor. So the most successful groups that I see, the data scientists still, you know, maybe they're just blessing and looking over the results. Yep, looks good. And just, you know, ends up like, if you think about if you had a data analyst doing data modeling, maybe you have the BI professional or the data warehousing person just kind of take a peek at the model and say, yep, that dimensional model looks right, or nope, that doesn't look good, or that look right, and just get their blessing.
Yeah, just have another pair of eyes with some experience looking at it and going, yeah, okay, or you missed these things, I think is the usual thing. You've made some funny assumptions here.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is, unlike a lot of other technologies, and maybe, you know, there are certainly stories that I've had in the past with maybe doing integration services package and somebody didn't know how to add a field to a process, so they kept having separate ones, and now you end up with a data warehouse with a ton of one record or one field tables, right, which is definitely not a very scalable design.
Nope.
It's one of those things in machine learning you may not know that you're doing anything wrong.
Yeah, especially if you're getting results. But I mean, always the big scare, and I remember this back from our early analytics days, was you put together an analysis that points to a potential direction for the business, and they're about to spend money on it, and you have, sort of have to have that gut check. Are you right? You know, have you fooled yourself with data?
Yeah. I have a webinar somewhere, and I've given the session a few times. I believe it was at InterUp as well, on how to avoid building bad models. And there's a lot of really simple tips, and some of the tips were from real projects where, you know, data warehousing team just wants to play with a cool new technology, and no, we're not going to involve the business, so we're going to build it, and, you know, just those things they tell us not to do.
Right.
And you get out there, and the first thing that happens is the business says, well, that doesn't make sense. And, you know, you would have required in this case, it was an insurance company. The use case that we were developing a model for was, you know, what types of agents should we hire and what ones to not hire? You know, who's a good candidate? Because insurance companies invest a lot of money into training incoming agents. And so the model comes back, and this is from many years ago, but the day where I was intense says, well, no, don't hire anyone from New York. And the subject matter says, well, did you take into account the legal changes and some of the laws in these jurisdictions?
Right.
Oh, no, the model never thought about that. So, I mean, right away, then all of a sudden you've lost credibility and you really want.
Yeah. And you got to dig your way back from that, where you make a bad report where you get a number wrong. You know, and now that director of sales is going to question everything you do.
That's right. So this is whole part of being able to trust the machine and trust the models. Mm-hmm. And you do want to get this right and be able to explain the what and why behind the model.
Mm-hmm. There's a whole area of this black box effect of a lot of machine learning and I think it happens more in neural nets than it does really in data regression techniques, but where you get a result, and it may even be correct, but you just can't explain why it's correct.
Yeah. So what is interesting, and one of the things that I'm seeing, and certainly I've seen different articles through the years on this too, is you'll never necessarily need to understand exactly how the engine works, mm-hmm. and explain every piece of it. If you think about the cars we drive, or rocket ships, and all sorts of crazy things. But you do need to explain, be able to justify or interpret and explain the reasons why it makes a decision one way or the other.
Right.
Similar to, and that's a data analyst's job, is to explain to the business what do these numbers mean and when do they change. And one good thing I'm really seeing in DARPA, which is a group out of the Department of Defense, mm-hmm. has some work around this on explainable machine learning. I'm seeing a lot of great, you know, research around it, some early releases. Our solution has something that explains for each and individual prediction, you know, what strongly influences those outcomes or not. And having that type of information to understand what influences the outcome will help you better use that model appropriately, or know what influences and doesn't influence it, or if something's missing altogether.
Also, we're already dealing with less technical people just presuming the machine is right and going off in wrong directions. So I would hope that our supposed technical experts, which last time I looked, I was supposed to be one, are more skeptical, that push against these things, including for themselves, your own results, to say, why did it do that? How did it get there? Like, is this correct?
Yep. And there's another. So data literacy being one of the big key, you know, themes of this next generation, mm-hmm. of analytics. The other one is critical thinking. And yeah. I'm hearing more and more about that from World Economic Forum and other world leaders on just being able to, and this is not something we've really been told. I mean, in my generation, it was, you're to be seen, not heard. You know, you're the cog in the wheel type thing. And now we're being told that, you know, it's the people skills that are really, really important. And that's hard for a lot of tech pros. For me, I would be so comfortable just sitting in my little home office and interacting with my puppy dogs,
yeah.
and not going out into the real world. Because that's my comfort zone. It's uncomfortable for a lot of technicians to communicate to the business. And it's a skill they have to have now that there's so much automation, not even just with machine learning and analytics, but things like robotic process automation. So now we really need to have these soft skills, these human skills, but critical thinking as well, to question more so these machines so that we keep them up to speed. And to reference the Gartner Data and Analytics event again, one thing that I thought was interesting, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a human that intervened so that we didn't have World War III and prevent one of the bombs that was supposed to go off. And I wish I remembered. It was Carly Ideon that talked about this in her section. Oh,
there's a classic story of it was the Soviets that stopped.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
it was a Soviet colonel who's looking at all the data and saying, this doesn't make any sense. I don't care what the computer's saying. It's wrong. Don't respond.
Yes, that was what Carly talked about. Yeah. And I had not heard that story before, but I thought, oh my God, yes. The machines definitely make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. It certainly had that time. And the automated response was an all-out launch of nuclear weapons. Probably would have ended the planet. So it's kind of glad that guy was there and critically thinking. The silly part is critical thinking has always been important and useful. I think it's all that's happened is we've got tools now that are so powerful that not thinking and then utilizing them causes serious problems.
Well, I think there's a few dynamics happening. If I look at it, yes, the tools certainly are one of them. But there's also extra sensitivity in this generation that I'm not used to. We're uncomfortable taking sides or arguing from different points of view. It's almost you have to have one point of view or you're shunned.
Yeah, they're with us or against us, really?
Well, it certainly seems that way quite often.
Because usually the data isn't that tidy. You know,
no, it's not.
I do feel like we're using these more sophisticated tools to find much subtler relationships than the ones we used just a few years ago. And if they were obvious, we would have found them with the old tools. So these are unobvious ideas, and they're going to go against your expectation, and they're going to be subtly different. You're going to have to think really hard about this.
Right. You do, and you have to be comfortable being a change agent, which is these are conversations I have often. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of folks that will resist. And if you think about Billy Beane, that's a fantastic story. I finally saw him. It was in person at an event, give a keynote. And that was only something like 10, 15 years ago. I'm saying that, well, we're in baseball. We only make decisions with our gut.
Hmm.
And thinking, you know, he was attacked in the newspapers. His own family says, Dad, you're an idiot. I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't know about any of this. But yes. And now look at how by being a change agent and, you know, making decisions that he felt data-driven decisions, right, you know, and doing what he truly believed in was making waves.
Yeah.
And so many folks these days are uncomfortable to speak up or make any kind of wave or question any kind of authority. And it's in an interesting time.
Yes. And interesting that we often, especially from a DBA perspective, like we chose a career that was in the back room, likely for a reason.
Yeah. It's comforting.
Yeah. And now you're asking me to do what? You're saying my best role is what? At the same time, I did this comparison once and made people pretty angry, but it's like, if all you're doing is keeping the lights on, keeping the machine running, well, what's the difference between you and a janitor too? Like, you're just an expense then, and we're going to find the least expensive way to operate it, where this aspect of data analytics is where we find new value in the work that company's already done and the data that we've already gathered.
Yeah, I would be scared to just be a DBA these days. You do have to be integrating into the business. And luckily in my career, I was always a mix, a blend of what you'd call a database developer, developing apps from the get-go and reports and things the business could see value from. So I've been very lucky. But if you think about, you know, with cloud, and I'm certain other folks have had these conversations before, if you have another company running the business, what else are you going to do? And I do think when I look at the SQL Server community that I grew up in, certainly the leaders in our community have warned folks, again, almost a decade ago, I could think about, you know, some of the past summit types of conversations and keynotes about, you know, growing skills into different areas and growing into cloud and delivering apps and becoming more of a developer and, you know, really spanning some other types of things. And the folks in my community even going ahead and doing these data science certifications and other types of things that, you know, back in 2000, I never would have seen them do that. You know, they were just really focused on installing SQL Server at scale from a command line.
Yeah. And the screwdriver spinners and, you know, the the bit flippers, like, no, providing value to the company, I think, is a pretty good idea. And stewardship of data, I think, is a great role. Just that responsibility for what data the company gathers, where it's stored, how it's protected, how it's shared out, and how you find value from it. These are good jobs. Like, they're interesting. You'll enjoy going to work.
Oh, I think it's fascinating work. So probably the most critical role would be something like a CDO today in an organization in a digital world. And the fact that there's even a chief data officer role, it's finally treated with the respect and executive need to put the protections around this data.
The recognition of the value.
Mm-hmm.
But I think value isn't in the gathering. Value is in the analysis and being able to shape the business from that analysis. So we're only, you know, we tend to think about it last, but it turns out to be the most important piece.
Right.
Well, that's a fun half hour. And I grabbed a few links along the way. So folks listening can grab the show notes to Jen's blog and to the InfoWeek article and Gartner's data literacy stuff, even the DARPA AI piece, which I think is all an interesting part of how seriously AI and machine learning is being taken in business today. Jen, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.